The Burrows of Berea is a conversational podcast.
We study the Bible and we talk about it.
Not all of us are of the same faith.
And one of us doesn't have a faith.
But we still love one another, and we're going to continue to talk about these things.
The things we believe in and the things we believe about what we read in the Bible. Not all of these are necessarily true. Some of it is opinion and speculation. Thank you for
listening and speculating with us.
There you go. That was good. Yes.
You are listening to the Burrows of Berea.
Well, welcome back to the Burrows of Berea. I'm Rick Welch, and to my left is Billy Ah Candy Kimsey.
Yummy like a gummy bear, just more furry.
Oh, a furry gummy
Good
bear.
Good Lord. Yuck. I've got some of those underneath my couch before. Does that make me crazy? Jerry, the Annihilator Lewis.
Hello.
You furry gummy bear.
You furry, Jerry.
Hey, Rick. You got the two strippers together. Some battle
Candy
for the
and
main.
Cherry.
Battle for
Sitting
the main
together.
Stage.
Yeah, you notice the cherries on our left now. Mm-hmm. All that complaining finally got through. Sarita the Edge Edgerton.
Hey, y'all.
Behind the glass, Rocket Man Andy Bishop.
Straight out of Compton.
Represent.
Ralph Hicks and Big Daddy Carter.
Oh, yeah.
You know what? I have been waiting for this day. We have Pastor Zach Davis from Mark Tree.
Not the Vineyard.
Arkansas. Not the Vineyard. But the Baptist Church, right?
That's it. I'm a little intimidated, to be honest.
Are you?
Really?
I didn't know his guns were this big.
You got to do some more working out before you come next time.
I'm going to have to hit the weight room over at the hotel after this.
Yeah, please tell everybody that Billy Eye Candy is barefoot up in here.
All the time.
Because we said, we got some guys coming from Arkansas. I was like, cool, man, I ain't wearing no shoes.
They were excellent post hole diggers.
Yeah.
Mountain men and Arkansas men, not that much difference.
No, not at all, really. Not at all. Well, Zach, thanks for making the trip. He drove all the way from Arkansas here today to be in the studio with us.
Oh, wow.
So, I know. It means a lot.
A lot of drive.
That makes me and Rick, we look kind of weak now.
Somebody out there, head out, do me today.
Yeah, that's right.
I can tell you every inch of the state of Tennessee.
Yeah.
I've seen it all in one day.
What is it, like 440 miles across that state?
I don't know. It got more orange the further east we got.
Yeah. Go Vols. Start getting towards that Knoxville area. Well, it means a lot that you came all the way up here. I really do appreciate that.
Well, thanks for having me. You guys are friends and got to meet you guys at the Berean Conference last year. So, pleasure to be with you and get to see some of you and eat with you and visit. And I don't think have we met?
Nope.
No, because Billy doesn't go anywhere ever. But that's because he likes to stay at home barefoot and dig holes and find furry gummy bears under his couch.
Everywhere you go, you have to have shoes. I'm not allowed.
No, in Arkansas. You need to come to Arkansas. Okay.
He's no like that sign at his house. No shoes, no shirt. Problem.
I got 99 problem.
And the cherry ain't one.
Oh, Lord.
Anyway.
For the record, that song's about a drug sniffing
girl. It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so when you were at the conference, the first thing that you did, the very first talk, was your testimony. And I asked you if we could capture some of your testimony here as well. So if you guys want to hear a little bit different, you can always go to the Berean Bible Church YouTube channel or the webpage and see the conference from 2023 and get Zach Davis's interview. Well, not really an interview, but his testimony that he shared. But it doesn't count unless he's at the Burrows of Berean.
Not at all.
I was saving the best for this. I knew this was coming.
That's right. So. Yeah. Yeah. So.
Sorry, David.
All right. So, Zach, to the best of your ability, can you tell me the earliest memory of when you heard the name Jesus Christ?
Well, it was on a Tuesday at 4:30. I was probably about 3 and a half.
See, he is ready.
And the axe fell on my dad's toe, and he said, The wind had a nice rose flavor to it. It was spring, and flowers were in bloom. The sky was blue, but it felt like it might rain later.
You were a good rider.
Yeah.
Now I don't remember what I said at the conference because I answered this question. If I say something different, I'm going to look ignorant. So,
you are from Arkansas.
Oh. Ooh.
Oh, well, we just lost all of them.
Directly for the exposed belly.
We just
kidding, Arkansans.
We just lost the love of all the Razorbacks.
Gosh. That was not a shot across the bow at all.
Woo, pig suey.
Bill Clinton just turned us off.
Hallelujah. I'm sorry.
When I was a kid, I mean, I probably went to church as much as anybody. So my dad was a deacon in a Baptist church, grew up in the Southern Baptist Convention. I mean, I would, like, the earliest memory I have in church probably is like vacation Bible school at 5, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I probably knew Jesus before I knew my sister. So I don't, you know.
Right.
One of them deals where you're always there. So definitely when I was a kid, growing up in Calvary Baptist Church in Harrisburg, the big city of almost 3,000 people. Mm. So I'd say that's the first time. And then really about every week after that. So
yeah. So you guys were, your father was a deacon, so you were in church, pretty much grew up in church your whole life.
Yeah, we were. I tell everybody my parents had a drug problem. They drug me to church.
Yeah, they drug me to church. I've heard that song. It's a good one.
So it was good, though. It was an interesting upbringing. Super conservative. We were talking about alcohol a while ago. And
yeah.
I'm not lying when I say that I've literally never taken a drink in my life. Mm-hmm. So, and I don't have any desire to at this point, so there's no need to.
It's just awesome because I bought him a bottle of wine. But let's give it a backstory. So here in Hendersonville, North Carolina, there is a little vineyard that's just a few miles down the road called Marked Tree Vineyard.
They only have one vine.
Yeah. Only one tree is marked. But you are the pastor of Marked Tree First Baptist Church. And is that the town, Marked Tree, Arkansas?
It is. Yeah.
So it just so happens that the sheriff of Jonesboro, which is, I guess, a town real close to Marked Tree.
About 30 minutes, yeah.
But they lived in Marked Tree. And so they moved here and started that vineyard. And so my wife told me about it. I was like, oh, wouldn't that be cool? So you don't have to drink it, but it is red wine and it says Marked Tree Vineyard. I thought it was pretty cool.
Can you say his name or no? Just so I can remember it and ask.
No.
Okay, that's fair.
Not because I don't want to, but no, because my wife knew it and I have already forgot.
Okay.
Last name, Park.
There was one guy, I think the owner of Marked Tree Vineyard is Tom Parks, but that's not the name of the sheriff of Jonesboro. I just know they called him Big Dad. So I don't know what that means.
All right.
But anyway, I'll
ask around. I'm
so
not familiar.
You don't have to drink, but you can just stare at it.
All right. That's fair. when I preached one time and said it wasn't a sin to drink alcohol if you didn't get drunk, then I think half the people in the room were extremely elated and happy. And then my dad was mad at me. So
do you know the difference between a Baptist and a Presbyterian?
Yeah, one of them doesn't speak to the other one at the liquor store.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty much it.
We don't have any Presbyterians in Arkansas, FYI. There's not very many of them.
No?
We call it the Methodist, but yeah, it's the same.
Yeah. Well, so let's see. So if you were raised in church, there's obviously a moment when it became really real to you. Because, you know, when you're raised in church, a lot of times you recognize it and you see it's real in others. But how long was it before it really took for you?
Like the most vivid memory I have, like, of being convicted of sin was in the fifth grade. And I was telling this the other day to some guys, and I didn't cuss or anything. But I remember in the fifth grade, everybody else was cussing, so I thought it'd be cool. I'd start cussing. So I cussed for about 2 or 3 weeks. And I remember the cool kids coming up to me, man, I didn't know you cussed. I'd, oh, yeah, F word, whatever, you know. And,
oh, yeah.
And then I got home one night, and I was thinking, well, this is about the stupidest thing I've ever done. And God says I shouldn't live this way because I grew up in church. And I probably just a couple weeks after that, I was sitting on the front pew, not even with my parents, and I just went forward and told, dude, I need to be saved. I was convicted of sin, and I knew the Lord. And he said, you want to get baptized? I said, absolutely not. And then he explained to me why I should. So I did at 10. I was 10.
Okay.
So I don't have one of those guided parental testimony deals.
Yeah.
So, and I truly believe I've been saved since then.
Mm-hmm.
Learned a lot and grew a lot, but yeah. So
at the age of, so from the age of 10, right? I know you told some of the story about whenever you, after high school and then you went to college, you were playing football, I think, right?
Yeah, I was. I played quarterback at Arkansas State, but I wasn't very good. So I was so low on the depth chart. There were 3 quarterbacks, 2 water boys, a towel girl, a kicker, and then me. So.
Yeah, and that towel girl was ugly.
She had all her teeth though, which is different for Arkansas.
That's so neat.
And she could take a hit.
She was out of state.
Wow. So from the time of 10 up until you're going to college. You know, what's going on with your faith? Like, so you, after high school, you stay in the same church through high school?
Yeah, so I was in the same church all the way through. And then, I don't, as far as, you know, being involved, I was super involved. And I would definitely say learning during that time. But, you know, I don't know how close or whatever. I don't have some crazy, well, I got into meth and then, you know, I had to come out of that. I don't have anything like that. So
yeah,
thank the Lord for that. I was extremely sheltered from that in that sense, but obviously battled things like everybody else does. And then my first year of college, I had started to learn to play the guitar probably like back in the ninth grade, which I just picked it up one summer and my grandpa taught me how to play, which is super cool. And that means a lot to me that he did. And
yeah.
Me and him were real close. And I still have all my grandparents, which is unbelievable at 31. So it's really cool. I just saw him yesterday. And so he taught me to play. And then I finally started leading music in church. And that was kind of my really entry into ministry, if you want to call it that. And I never had a desire to go into ministry. I went to school to become a teacher and a coach. And I really have enjoyed teaching a lot more than I ever did, which my dad was a PE teacher, you know, growing up. He's a PE teacher and a coach. So you know how it is with PE teachers. You all had coaches that were probably history teachers or PE teachers, and you didn't learn anything for 4 years.
Or the driver's ed teacher.
There's the old saying, those that can't do teach and those that can't teach, teach gym.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
That's true. But eventually I got involved a little bit in teaching some in youth ministry and did that for a couple of years. And you know, that really was in that world probably for about 6, 7, maybe 8 years. I'd have to add it up, but really started to grow. And when I actually came to the church that I'm at now, First Baptist Church in Mark Tree in 2017, and I was just supposed to do music for 2 weeks and wound up staying 2.5 years. But one thing that changed for me then was that I started to teach an adult Sunday school class, which is really, there's a lot of different people in it now, but there's some of the same people from when I had originally started, and it's really cool. And that's really when my love for teaching probably changed. Not that I'm a great teacher, I'm not, but just to see people learn and to grow, that was probably the first deal. And I thought, man, I don't have to yell at them to stop talking every 10 minutes like I did all the kids in the youth group, so this is way better. I'm never doing that again.
Yeah, I would imagine that you took it really seriously, you know, that now you're teaching adults that are older than you, I assume?
Yeah, I was probably, I don't know, I'd have to add my age up, 31 minus 7. So I'm, you know, neighborhood of 24, 25-year-old teaching 40 to anywhere from 40 to 65-year-olds.
Yeah,
so
how did that happen?
Ancient of days. Right,
it was good. No, it was great. It was unreal.
Yeah.
They loved it. Like, they absolutely loved it. And I loved it because I was growing and learning. And, man, those are the most exciting times, and you don't realize that you're even in them until that. Now, I had no idea where it would take me, but but that's really when I got serious about studying the Bible, because you have to. I mean, you walk into a room and you might have had a really good basis or a foundation, but at some point you got to start putting some stuff together so that everybody can, you know, they're depending on you. And that's really the first time I thought, these people are spiritually depending on me. You know, yeah. I'm not full time at the church yet, but they're spiritually depending on me to say something of value at some point here. And I thought that was really cool.
And what happens if they ask a question? That was what my scary part. I was like, oh,
okay.
I need to know enough, because if they ask me a question, I
No, you're exactly right. And I'm smart enough now to say, I don't know. But back then, there were probably times when I would answer something that didn't make any sense at all. But one thing I did, I started teaching at we call it CYS in Arkansas. It's a correctional facility for like high school kids. So I would go teach there once a week and we would do like a little music service with them. And then I would teach for about 15 or 20 minutes. And they would ask me all kind of questions in the world. And looking back at it, that was probably one of the best things that I ever did.
Yeah.
Just to be ready to field stuff like that. So
yeah, that was boot camp.
Yeah, it was. And then Justin asked me 15 questions on the way down here today. And I said, I don't have any idea.
So for those people that don't know, as he drove up, he had his friend Justin, who is his bodyguard, he said, that came up here with him. So he's in the studio with us, but we don't have any more mics or headphones. So you just have to yell.
Say hi, Justin.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Cool. All right, so now let's talk about, once you went like for music, you were there for 2 weeks, then you stayed for 2.5 years. So what happens after that 2.5 years? Where do you go?
So I think I left for like 9 or 10 months. So I wind up leaving for like 9 or 10 months. And then their pastor leaves. Well, the oldest deacon, I guess you call him the head deacon. I don't know what you call it. We don't, whatever he was. The deacon in charge. He
at
came,
my church, it's the chairman of the deacon.
We yeah, sure. Yeah, I don't think
that's
we,
what they call
yeah, chairman of the deacon. That's it. Thank you, Streeter. The chairman of the deacons comes
the
to
head,
my,
the head deacon in charge.
The head deacon in charge making decisions.
Would that be the head dick?
Well, that's it.
Boo, yeah. He, and now we're explicit. Bam. Yeah,
right there.
He just writes a schedule.
Where was I at? I lost all track of thought. Right
there. You talk about the head deacon with new you and the yeah, proposal.
You've been gone for 9 months.
Yeah, he was coming to my work, and like he came once, and then he came again, and he was talking to me about coming to the church, and my boss asked me, he's like, who's that guy that keeps coming to talk to you? And I was like, that's my grandpa. And it's not my grandpa, by the way. But I don't want to get in trouble. So yeah. Eventually he kept coming up here, and I was like, look, dude, y'all are either going to have to hire me, or you're going to have to stop coming up here. We got to figure something out. So they wound up hiring me, and it was really good.
Okay, and so how long ago was that?
That was 2020. I've been there 3.5 years.
So you started right in the middle of COVID.
Right in the middle of COVID, yeah. It would have been summer of 2020 would have been when I started preaching there, and then I think they wound up hiring me in September.
Now, did they have a congregation during that time? Or were you having to do online things or?
No, they hadn't met for a couple months, and then they had just started meeting back during kind of the interview process. Mm-hmm. So I remember there was no Sunday school or nothing like that. So nothing, literally nothing else was going on. No Wednesday, no Sunday school, but evidently at 11, COVID couldn't get you. So you could all come together. Yeah. You could come together at 11 and COVID wasn't going to be allowed to get you. So we were just doing 11 o'clock service.
Yeah.
Really a different, interesting time.
For it sure. Was.
But looking back at that, that was a blessing too. Just, I guess, God really is sovereign in everything because I needed those. I needed a time when I started. I was good at everything practical. I'd done all that in youth ministry. We need to get people there. I can get people there. But I needed time to sit and study. And COVID afforded me about a year and a half to really just have plenty of time to sit in an office and study.
And would you say having that year and a half time to study that it rocked your world and changed the way you thought about the Bible?
Yeah, it got me in a lot of trouble.
Well, can I ask you a question?
You can ask me.
What were you hired as a lay pastor, or do you have a divinity degree? Were you just oftentimes a church doesn't hire if you don't have or have the intent of going back and getting your degree?
No, it was
in theology.
Interesting. They had been burned by. We're pretty close to a seminary that's there. I won't say the name, but we're pretty close to a seminary that's there. And I think they had been burned a couple times by some guys that they had gotten from seminary. So they were really turned off by the idea of anybody coming from seminary or me going back to seminary. That was kind of the feel that I had.
Did you have a degree?
I do not. I didn't finish seminary. I went for about a year and a half. And it was probably one of the most frustrating year and a half in my life because it was teaching me everything practical. Like we'd spend 3 class periods on how to baptize somebody, but we never sat down and went through the book of Habakkuk. And I'm like, this would be really more beneficial if we would go through the books and you try to help me teach what this is saying. I don't need a whole half a semester on how to do a funeral. Like that's not beneficial to me. I already preached 12 of them. I'm good.
Right. Yeah.
So
most, not everybody in this room, but most people that are going to tune into this, you know, I've most likely heard of you. I would assume, maybe not all of them, but you went through a pretty radical change, okay, and especially in eschatology, we know that for certain, okay. And so, was that during that year and a half period when you really got time to study the Bible?
Yeah,
or was
that's
it
when
before
it started.
Then?
No, that's when it started. I made a commitment that I was going to teach the prophets in my Sunday school class, so. You know, I don't remember what I was doing when I first started from the pulpit, but I made a commitment that I was going to teach to the prophets, and I taught the sorriest lesson through Jonah that you've ever heard in your life. I thank God those weren't recorded because I would not post them. but after that, I thought I'd be smart and went to the book of Daniel. And I started the book of Daniel as, you know, pretty much everything that I'd been taught and premillennialism and that whole deal. But by the end of it, I started making some switches and, you know, I think by the time I was done, I wound up a partial preterist postmillennial.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And so what was that like for you? Because, you know, would you say, was the church dispensational or was it premillennial? Like, what was it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, dispensation.
Standard Southern Baptist.
If you asked half of them what they were, I don't know that they could tell you what the name was, honestly, right. But that's what it was.
Right.
I don't mean that as a shot at anybody. I mean, I just think there's a lot of people that just assume that's all
there
is.
No, it's true. I think a lot of us didn't know what the names were, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't know what it was called.
Most generalities that...
How do you...
They don't know about eschatology.
I've taught it, and I didn't know dispensationalism was what it was called.
Right. Yeah, we didn't know. I mean, we were just... I mean, we were left behind people. You know, that's what we were following.
Yeah, I don't know that I could have told you, you know, when I was... I couldn't have told you about amillennialism, postmillennialism, premillennialism when I was 20. So, and nobody was in church more than me. But I remember in the fifth grade, we watched Kirk Cameron's movies. So,
yeah.
I know that.
Oh, yeah.
Of course. Yeah. And, or if
I watched everything Kirk Cameron did.
Yeah. Growing Pains. I watched it because of Tracy Gold. Oh, yeah. But
I'm curious about something, not coming from seminary, because I've been a member of several different types of churches and different faiths. Most of the churches I've been to have like a 3-year cycle, and it's mostly New Testament with some Old Testament, and everyone teaches the same thing. So what do you decide? Do you teach the same old thing that everyone else does, or do you try to teach more than...
No, I was way too stupid for that. my commitment was that I definitely had gotten into a Reformed blend, and all the Reformed cool kids are always just teaching through books of the Bible. Mm-hmm. Well, I just assumed if you're teaching through books of the Bible, you can't take anything out of context and get it wrong. And I found out that was not the case.
Yeah.
So I really, all I've done since I've been there is teach through books. Like if I tried to do a study, we're going to do a study on peace or something. I'm going to do that for 4 weeks. They would hang me. Like, that's not going to fly. So, like, just take us through a book and we'll do that.
Four weeks of peace.
Do you? Yeah.
Are you tired of compromising when it comes to protecting your valuable firearms? Then let us tell you about Carolina Cases, your ultimate destination for hard plastic, impact-proof pistol cases. Carolina Cases are TSA approved and are crafted with high-quality foam, ensuring maximum protection for your firearms during transport or storage. At Carolina Cases, they understand the importance of safeguarding your investments. Carolina Cases provide unparalleled durability, keeping your pistol safe from impact and damage. So hop over to www.carolinacases.net to explore their wide range of pistol cases designed to meet your specific needs. Don't settle for less. With Carolina Cases, you can ensure your firearms are safely stored, preserve your peace of mind, and protect what matters most. Enter code Burrows, that's B-U-R-R-O-S, at checkout to receive free shipping.
Do you concentrate on the major books, or do you go to Habakkuk or something different?
No, I just taught Habakkuk. I taught Obadiah. I taught Malachi. I really spent the last year and a half in my Sunday school class in the minor prophets. Somebody in the room actually quit my Sunday school class because he got sick of the minor prophets, so I won't say the name.
Oh, I imagine he's in this room.
Follow my eyes.
Dang.
Oh, yeah.
Bang, shang-a-lang.
You don't know what you're missing.
Yeah.
So
that's why he had to drive to Arkansas this morning.
he just didn't want anything ruined by prophecy. He wanted everything to be a surprise.
Whenever you said it, when you said he asked 15 questions, did any of them have to do with minor prophets?
No, we talked about Noah's flood, but don't get me on that.
Okay. So I want to go back to that place there when you finally, you know, like you come to postmillennial. And so what's the journey from that position, Zach, to get you to where you are today? Like something changed. You went through Daniel. Did you see something in Daniel, or where does this happen for you?
Daniel 7:13-14 was probably the first spot to me. And that's talks about when he comes to the Ancient of Days and receives the kingdom.
Right.
Well, I had somebody in my class just randomly, like she wasn't even, she's not a, you know, what you would call a, you know, somebody just a deep theologian. I think she was just like, caught her off guard, and she's like, are you sure that's something that's in our future? And I'm like, well, I don't know. I'll go back and look at it or whatever. And I don't know if she had Great Commission in mind or what she had in mind. But so I go back and I'm reading, and this is what started me down the amillennialism trail. So I pick up Sam Storm's Kingdom Come, and I don't remember how many pages that book is. It's like almost 500 pages, I'm pretty sure. And I read it in one day. I sat on the couch and my wife looked at me like I was an idiot. She's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm reading this book and I'm not putting it down until I'm done. So I read Sam Storm's book, and I think he took it at the Ascension, Daniel 7:13-14. He came up to the Ancient of Days, was given a kingdom, yada, yada, yada. Well, now I think that passage is AD 70 and not about the Ascension. But it did start the shift for me to say, all right, well, this guy, Sam Storms, is putting a whole lot of stuff in the past, and he's still got stuff in the future, but that was really the very beginning for me to start going down the road. And then from there, I went over to some Doug Wilson stuff and postmillennialism stuff, which put even more stuff in the past. And for anybody listening to this that's going down the eschatology trail, don't get caught up in pre-mill, post-mill, all-mill. The only question you need to be asking is, how much stuff is in the past and which of these verses are still in my future? That is the simplest way to think about this.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
If I would have known that, it would have saved me a lot of time because I chased so many rabbits that I didn't have to chase. But looking back at it now, I'm glad that I chased all those rabbits because I know the answers. Well, at least I think I know the answers. Some people definitely say I don't know the answers.
Right. Yeah, I mean, but that
that's why. Just don't put it out on the social media.
Sarita, you raising your hand only opens you up for debate. Do you want to have the debate tonight? Where's the mic? What's up?
I'm hot.
She's hot. Oh.
We said that you were.
She's been watching. She's got the vapors.
I have the vapors.
How very Southern. Yeah. If it's warm in there, I mean, I leave you guys to compromise on what to do with the heater.
It's probably just me, so don't worry about it.
We've all got jackets on. You can turn it on if you want.
It's fine.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
She's dying, but it's okay.
She's dying.
I'll be seeing Jesus.
Well,
on your way down.
I won't quite make 50.
Jeez, Ralph.
Wow. Damn.
So,
hot crowd.
Nobody can see that explicit.
No.
Dreamer.
So, all right, Zach, I'm just going to keep drilling you here, okay? Because you drove all the way here from Arkansas, so. We're going to make it worth it. You get it, right? So, there's a place, you're a pastor, you're thinking of the congregation, you're thinking of your Sunday school class. It's different, I know, from Sunday school class to the congregation. I get it, especially from a pastor's perspective. But you're wrestling with all of this stuff eschatologically, but you're also teaching from a different point of view, or at least, do you or don't you? I mean, are you kind of wrestling with that while you're...
I did. They saw me. They saw me go through it, which was the cool part.
Yes.
So they were going through it with me. So they knew how, you know, real and hard it was or whatever. So that was really neat because they were seeing the same thing that I was seeing. Like people outside might have been telling me I was crazy, but they were seeing some of the same stuff that I was seeing.
So you was teaching Daniel at the same time?
Yeah, I was teaching through the book of Daniel. And I got to Daniel 12 and quit because I didn't know what to do with Daniel 12. I do now, but I didn't know what to do with Daniel 12 then, so we just stopped the study.
Daniel 12?
I just ended it. The resurrection that happens whenever the power of the holy people is completely shattered, and those holy people have to be the Old Testament saints in the first century, which necessitates the resurrection happens then, and that's when Daniel and them come out of Hades. But don't ask Sarita that, because I think she thinks those Old Testament saints are still in Hades, and that some of them other people hadn't been judged yet, but that's neither here nor there.
I don't know if that's what she holds or not.
You got a question for that one?
Explain.
Now raise your hand.
Now she's really hot. Dang. So
that was for the ignorant Arkansas comment.
Yeah. So Andy, basically what he's talking about is what separates full preterism from partial preterism, from postmillennial, from all millennial, is the way that we interpret Daniel 12, Daniel 7, 12, and 13.
A lot. So like
there's a lot to
it. I don't
want
to say a lot, but meaningful things hinge on that particular verse.
Yeah, well, if you study it long enough, you start to see that these things they all work together. You'll see things like Matthew 24, 1 Thessalonians 4, 1 Corinthians 15. You'll start to see these very similar things like the cloud comings and how these things work. But in Daniel, like he's describing these particular things that happen. And they all coalesce and happen at the same time, and they have to. He links them. And when he does, it throws a monkey wrench in your eschatology. It just does. So what you start doing is playing, like you look at your verses, and they start splitting things like, nope, that can't be here, and that can't be here. And it's just what happens. I did it too for a very long time, because I couldn't accept it.
I'm doing it now.
Yeah, you're moving things around to make yourself feel better?
I am not a preterist. I'm just reading all this stuff because he answered. Who was it that where did we go that I asked someone a question that answered a question that I'd had for years? It must have been to Berean,
probably.
And I asked somebody a question that I'd had for years as a Catholic that they said have faith, and then they started talking and saying things, and then Rick started doing this, and now I have to put dates together to see what matches up.
Well, part of what makes futurism really easy is erasing history or never talking about it. You know, when you completely have 70 AD completely wiped out or nothing there or any historical events that happened in that period of time, you can't link anything together.
Yeah. Had you ever heard that, Zach? Like when you were growing up, had anything about the destruction of the temple been taught to you?
Never heard AD 70 in my life.
Yeah.
So you grew up in church and never heard it?
Not once.
And don't you think that would be at least taught?
Yeah, looking back at it, it's almost like there was a conspiracy against it.
It feels like it, doesn't it?
It had to. It had to have been.
Yeah, I think the Plymouth Brethren did it.
There's no way you can...
I'm not kidding. They did. The Plymouth Brethren.
There's no way you can... I don't know. Unless it's just brainwashing straight out of seminary, which is very possible, but I don't know. I mean...
Well, the whole religious concept is brainwashing because we're teaching people...
I can't wait for you to dig out of this one. Hey, go ahead, buddy.
There are so many different religions.
Yeah. Brainwashing and teaching are pretty closely related. It's just whether or not you're looking in and think they're doing it wrong.
I mean, all churches just brainwash. That's how you become a Christian.
Let's just be honest. It depends on how far you get to the cultish part.
Go ahead, Ralph. Dig out. I'm ready.
There are so many different religions and sects of everything that they're teaching. And everyone's teaching what they believe, and that's what ends up happening to kids when they're young, is that's what they believe. And that is a part of, you know, they're not doing it to brainwash them in that sense, in an evil sense, but these are my beliefs, and I want you to have my beliefs and because I believe this, and this is the way it really is. And so that's what ends up happening.
Yeah, it becomes like a form of indoctrination, yes. Well, I wouldn't call it brainwashing.
Well, like I say, the brainwashing is just a judgment of education, right?
I think this is a good parallel. I think there are people who know, like maybe at the seminary level, but there are plenty of pastors in the pulpits that don't know.
That's correct.
Okay, so
I agree.
There's a difference between the willful subjection of it and then the complete ignorance of it. And I'll make this same comparison, and y'all can get mad at me over this if you want to. I think people like Doug Wilson, Ken Gentry, Jeff Durbin, they know the implications of what they believe. Mm-hmm. But there are a million other partial preterists in the world that love those guys to death and follow them that they're in ignorance, and they're not far enough down the road yet to know what they know to see where it's going to lead.
Yeah, but you know what's unfortunate is that those three men that you mentioned were part of the people that created that list for Gary DeMar, which really irritated me because I know that Doug Wilson is way smarter than that. And that I'm with you on that one. I am very much with you on that one.
All right, good. I got one in my corner at least.
Well, I think we all fit.
You got more. I promise.
So you think it's more of a, and I'm going to use this word, and I don't, it's almost nefarious?
It's control.
That the people at the top know, and it's nefarious control of the ignorance of the mass population?
I think some of it is, for sure.
So it's the same thing as the Martin Luther's 99, the theses. You know, he thought that was indoctrination because only one or two guys could have a Bible. It was chained to the pulpit. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He wanted everybody to have access.
Yeah, I think that's a good comparison. Well,
the crazy thing is you just don't – that's the part you cannot answer. You can't understand if it's a willful deletion or people knowingly taking it out because they know that it takes away any authority or power they have. The most pastors that get into this, they know they back away from it. And I'm so thankful, Zach, that you didn't back away from it because you know it can possibly undermine your career.
Or was too stupid.
Yeah, you were so dumb you didn't know it, but it worked out, didn't it?
Well, I mean, when you begin to to teach fulfilled gospel, it can absolutely undermine everything because, one, it takes away the fear factor and the fear that can be used because of an impending event that's supposed to come to the world or your life. It puts you in a fear factor that says, I need to be so fearful of God that I'm not going to do anything. I'm not going to get
involved. That's my experience.
You're not going to get involved in anything. I'm not going to participate in much because...
You know, we've had this discussion. Christians who have been dispensationalists or whatever their particular eschatology, they're the ones running the orphanages. They're the ones running the soup kitchens. They're the ones that are going out and being missionaries.
They're not dispensational, Sarita. They're post-millennials too. And they're all millennials
sure,
too.
But my point is that
my point is that we grew up with that same fear.
Yes.
We grew up with that. I'm not saying that.
I did not grow up with that.
You're not
fear.
Polishing. No, because you didn't go to church till you were 25.
No, I did go to church my whole life. I wasn't a Christian till I was 25.
Okay. So what I was taught was that you had to, you knew that Christ was coming at any minute. He can, you didn't know that. No. And you were in a Baptist church.
Yep.
Well, see, I don't know what other Baptist churches don't teach that.
Oh my gosh!
Everyone I ever went to always warned me.
The Western Church is the only church that believes in dispensationalism.
You're a sinner and you're going to hell.
No, not the only.
Yeah,
one.
But did not you not go to a Western Baptist?
Worldwide, the American Western Church is the only one that teaches dispensationalism.
No, I understand that.
I don't disagree with you.
Did you grow up in a dispensational church?
I don't know. Okay. I never heard anybody talk about the end times.
Until
Left Behind. I was like, what is this nonsense?
You never heard anybody talk about the end times?
No.
I don't know what kind of church you went to.
It wasn't the kind of church I grew up in.
I grew
Southern Baptist Church in South Carolina.
Oh, God, every Easter you heard about it because they're talking about it, everything coming.
We just sang, and then, he's alive, hallelujah.
Well, one of the things that I like about what Zach talks about.
This is Zach's testimony, I'm sorry.
And I've listened
this
to...
This is great. This is how it works.
I've listened to some of his YouTube things. What I like and what I'm hearing here and what I'm liking about it is, and this goes back to this, that word that I used that you jumped all over a minute ago, he doesn't just feed you
he brainwashes you.
No, he's doing just the opposite playing. Because, you know, you go to these churches with these pastors that went to church all their life and then went to seminary and learned you're going to teach this and you're going to teach this way and this is the way we believe. And that's not what it does. That's not what he does. He goes and he reads it to understand it, to give us an understanding, but not from something that's been passed down for all these years from these people that say you have to believe this way and it's only this way.
Yeah. That's a beautiful
but
way of putting
is,
it. Yes.
He is understanding it for himself so he can help us understand it. And he's giving him the truth as he sees it and giving you the proof of his life.
Exactly. But I want Zach to jump in here because there's a very different ending for somebody like Zach Davis and somebody like Joel Rosenauer, somebody like Glenn Hill. Okay. Glenn Hill,
right.
Fabulous book, 48-year ministry. Boom. Down the tube simply because he believes that everything is fulfilled. By saying that, he could not enter into a single pulpit anymore. Why? Well, because you're teaching a false teaching, so therefore, blah, 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 whatever. Joel Rosenauer lost everything. These men. Now, Zach has a very different experience. That's why I wanted you here. So, Zach, how did you do it and not lose everything? How many people ask you that question a year?
Well, he didn't lose nothing. He lost something.
No, but did you hear what he said?
He said a lot.
A lot of people ask him that question. How did you do this and maintain a church?
I'd say about once or twice every 2 weeks, I get an email from a pastor that says, I'm literally going through the exact same thing you do. You're the only person I know that's ever made it through this. What did you do?
Yeah, so call out to all pastors who are going through this. Listen carefully. Because I think it's about a matter of the heart.
He's about to tell you the secret.
The secret. But honestly, it's also long-term book. Relationships,
and
isn't
next
it?
Next time on the Burrows of
Real. I think well-built. The secret is being a place that happens to also sort of be primed for that same thing. I think that's the secret.
I think if you have a loving relationship, I think if they want you there and you really care, that's a good start. You got to care.
I think that's the whole thing. There are so many people in pews that if you pastor them well, then, you know, there are things that we can come along with or not come along with. And I told them when they hired me, I said, I'm going to do two things. I'm going to study as hard as I can, and I'm going to pastor you the best of my ability. And I've done those two things. I may not have done a lot of other things, but I've done those two things, and I think I've done them decently well. And I think that's just a testimony to the relationships that I have with the folks in the church, and I love them, and they love me, and there's a genuineness there. And not every single person. I'm not acting like we didn't lose anybody. We did lose some people, but I hate it. I hate to see anybody go. I really do, especially – I'll get into the convention stuff later, but that's neither here nor there right now. But I just think for anybody listening that would say, well, how do you make it through this? Well, you better love these people, and they better know that you love them and care about them and that you're visiting them and that you're calling them, that you're going to see them in the hospital and you're going to their mom's funeral and their cousin's funeral and that type of stuff. And then I would just say go slow and be willing to say, I don't know. If you don't go slow, then you're going to ruin the whole thing. I had so many people for so long that already saw the end in sight. They can see it. They're like, you're going to have to stand up and say this. You need to just go ahead and tell the whole kit, bang, and caboodle. Well, if I would have stood up and said, you know, maybe even I'd have to trace back exactly when I was convinced that the second coming already happened. But if I would have stood up the first week and said, well, man, I'm convinced that the second coming already happened. Number one, I didn't know it well enough to defend it completely as good as I do today or the day that I announced it. Number two, the pushback on it would have been so crazy that I would have lost a large amount of people just on the shock factor of hearing something like that. Well, instead of them having to hear the shock factor of it, what I did was just keep teaching through the books of the Bible. And the more they heard it, the more it was explained. Then when people were coming to them and saying, well, what's your pastor teaching? They were saying, well, he's teaching the Bible. We believe it exactly like he's saying it because they saw it walk through and went slow. You don't have to go upset the apple cart right away. It's not worth it. It doesn't matter. At the end of the day, it ain't about what Zach knows because Zach doesn't know everything. There's a whole lot of things that Zach doesn't know. I'm in charge. Not in charge, but I'm responsible to some degree or another for the spiritual well-being of these people. And if I put them in Bible shock, then it's not good for them because I don't want to put them in the same Bible shock that I was in. I want to take them slow because I went through that same shock and I know what it did to me thinking this upsets, you know, some of the things that I believed growing up.
Yeah.
So I tried to take them as slow as I could through it, but I pastored them extremely well too. And I stood up and said, this is what I believe. Most of you already know this. If you want me to resign, I'll resign. And literally, we sat there for an hour, and people stood up and said, don't leave, don't leave. That's it. You know what I mean? So that's the testimony that I have of that, which that's the grace of God in it for me. But I really did try to be gracious in it. And I can remember being so mad at the Lord because when I was like 23 and 24 as a youth pastor, I'm thinking, I can preach better than this guy. Like, why am I not a pastor already? Well, if I would have went through this at 23 or 24, it would have been a loose cannon all over the place and hurt people all over. So really thankful to God that, you know, he waited till I was 27 to let me pastor.
Isn't it interesting to think that Christ didn't start his ministry till he was 30 and that he was with the disciples for 3.5 years and they still didn't get it. How long and how patient he was with his disciples, you know, and this is the Son of God here, teaching them things that they knew from the Old Testament, but he was fulfilling them right, you know, in front of them. They just couldn't take it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I have plenty of people right now still in the same, like, I don't know what percentage of my congregation believes that it's all fulfilled or not. I really don't know the answer to that. I would say half at least, but I don't know that they could all sit down and explain it. You know what I mean? Like maybe sit down and explain like me or Travis could. So,
right.
We're still learning and we're still growing and there's still I'm learning about the gospel every week, every day when I sit down and study. I'm still learning about, we're talking about an unsearchable God here. So, yes. I'll never exhaust the end of who he is in my time on this earth.
It is quite shocking. I've spent a lot of my life doing it and I feel like I haven't scratched the surface. I heard David Curtis say it the other day. I haven't scratched the surface. I'm like, man, like these guys have spent 30, 40 years working at it. Look at Gary DeMar, 40 years of writing and still working it. You know what I mean?
So many facets of it.
Well, you know, I think it's funny, you know, it's almost like the frog in the water thing. You know, you didn't throw the frog, your congregation, into the boiling water. You kind of let it simmer and heat up so that they wouldn't jump out necessarily. Not that, you know, you're holding them hostage or anything, but like, I respect a pastor who will get up and say, don't take my word for it. Open your Bible. Read it for yourself. Pray for eyes that see and ears that hear and discernment of what is right. And as I started going through my own journey of leaving the DISPE side of things, I talked to a pastor I know. And very quietly, he's in the Southern Baptist Convention. He said, you wouldn't believe the number of pastors who actually believe something similar to what I believe. But we just don't say it because that's not... You can't say that in the seminaries, the SBC seminaries that are out there. You can't say it because they're all, y'all know how I feel about the boomer generation not letting go, but they're not letting go. Mm-hmm. And they're not letting go of those old ideas that aren't working for people. Mm-hmm. And America is falling away from the gospel faster than anybody could ever have imagined. Billy Graham could never have imagined that.
No, but... I mean, of course, the gospel that they were teaching was a dispensational gospel as well. You see what I mean?
You're talking about eschatology. I'm talking about Jesus Christ, him crucified and resurrected. I'm not talking about anything else.
I'm talking about the majority of our country was taught dispensational theory, and it worked in our lives. That's what it did for us, okay? It was just part of it. I'm not saying that they were being malicious. They were taught what I was taught, and they were taught by their papaw and their papaw before them. This all started in the 1800s, 1830s, so it took a while, but it went like wildfire in our country.
You still see signs. Are you ready?
It's constant.
To me, it's just fear-mongering that we've been going through the last couple hundred years. And what I've noticed with these new generation of kids in business, they don't wait for promotions. They go to another company. I was taught to wait. It's not your turn. And then I get promoted in front of somebody I shouldn't have, and I'm mad, and I'm angry, and the supervisor comes to visit me. Well, you just got to understand, and you got to wait. And these guys aren't waiting, and it's the same thing. These preachers preaching, you're a sinner, and you don't deserve it. You're going to hell. You deserve hell. You deserve hell. If all I deserve is hell, then what am I studying for? What am I this for? But that's not what Jesus ever was about.
Kids these days just don't have the same respect for pain and suffering.
They don't.
That we did in the past.
But that's exactly right.
But they respond to love, and everybody responds to love. I mean, this is a person that I don't care for as a pastor. Because of the way he preaches, I believe he's a motivational speaker. However, he has one of the biggest churches in the world, and that's Joel Osteen, and he preaches love above everything. And Jesus is love.
But do you ever recall, Zach, and then I want to get into the Southern Baptist Convention. Do you recall hearing... like a sermon that says let's say they give an altar call, and there's the fear at the altar call that you want to get in before Christ comes back. Did you ever hear those kind of sermons?
Maybe not even necessarily in my home church. I mean, I'm sure I heard the sermons, but I was fortunate enough to have a pastor that studied really hard. And I talked about him at my, at Berean when I gave my testimony. And he really wasn't like that to a hardcore degree. But I can remember like going to revivals or any kind of convention stuff that we did, like some of that. That's the way – I mean, that was the thrust of it. And you miss the whole kingdom aspect, I think. And whatever fulfilled eschatology brings, the most important thing that it brings to me is not about how much prophecies in the past or future or whatever. Like at the end of the day, I care about that, but I don't care about that. Because what matters at the end of that is – if that whole covenant thought is fulfilled, then I'm in my right standing with God is better than it can ever be right now. And that's different than what the saints, even in the first century, had because the law wasn't fulfilled yet. So that's the first most important. The second thing that's attached to that is that the kingdom came. Mm-hmm. So that the kingdom's here now, that it's not prolonged. And how does that affect the way that I live? Well, if you think we're still in the transition period, then that changes everything. And that's why they're preaching that way, because they think we're still in the transition period, waiting on somebody to be destroyed and judged, waiting on the earth to burn up, and waiting on Satan to be defeated, and waiting on all these other things to happen. And that's why you come up with that. But like what y'all were talking about a while ago, to me, like that whole mindset is we just miss the kingdom. Like we just miss the work that we're supposed to be doing because it's established and that it's here.
Mm-hmm.
I heard the sermons, and I hate the idea of it. Like I don't know if y'all listen to me preach or not very much, but I don't do that. Like I don't. That's not my aim.
This is not an exaggeration. So maybe I'm just the anomaly in the room, but I heard it every Sunday.
I think you just fell in with a very focused group, and I think there's plenty of them.
I was
like
in
that.
Four different churches.
I mean,
but it's localized at.
I think that's it.
It's localized here. It's like a thing here.
Growing up, I mean, I went to church sometimes, like Sunday school and stuff, you know, but. You know, of course, I knew that they thought that Jesus could basically come back at any time, but there was this like inherent like thing immediately below that, like a paper's width below that, that was like, probably not today though.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's kind of how it was. Yeah, probably not today though.
Yeah.
I dated a girl once who went to a certain type of church, and they did that every week, like you say. I heard that over and over and over again. And then one time they started preaching something else and said only a certain amount of people go. And then I figured, well, I'm not part of that group anyway, so I went to another church. But I identify with what you're saying there, because it does happen, and it happens a lot.
Yeah, and after a while, you're like, have you ever heard the old saying, preaching to the choir? You know, like you're preaching to the choir. Well, that's what it felt like a lot. Like it was all the time. So it was wearing me out. So I think maybe, Sarita, I'll say to you, I'm more adamantly opposed to it, because I've heard it so much that it's a fear-mongering tactic to create numbers.
Okay, so
it's bizarre.
I guess maybe I was blessed when I got saved. I moved to Savannah, Georgia, and went to a Baptist church down there who was pastored by a preacher from New Zealand who had been in the Communist Party of New Zealand and had gotten saved. And he never preached on any of that stuff. Mm. He preached on serving others, loving others, fulfilling the two commandments from Jesus: love God with your whole heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself.
Kingdom living.
And we were always going out into the community and doing things. And I didn't know that churches were polishing brass on a sinking ship until I heard Glenn Hill say that. And I was like, wait, I never heard that.
Yeah, so
I heard, go out and serve your brother. Go out and serve your sister. Go out and serve the needy, the ones who don't know Jesus. Go out and show them who Jesus is with your actions and not with your words, or sitting here in this pretty church that we go and we're very blessed. So I never really had that indoctrination. Now, did I take a class on it? Did I read a book on it? Yes, of course I did, because it was there.
Of course.
And I was interested in it. It's kind of fascinating to me, the whole way, you know, that kind of comes about, and that it could be written. But that wasn't the primary focus of that church, and it wasn't the primary focus of the church that I came to Hendersonville and went to. Mm-hmm. So that wasn't the primary focus. It was serving our community, loving one another, serving across the nation, across the countries, going on mission trips, sharing the gospel, making disciples. So I guess maybe I got lucky and didn't have, you know,
I would say blessed.
Blessed.
Yeah.
I didn't have hell preached at me every single week.
Well, you know, you were being taught the Great Commission.
How to live the kingdom. How to live the kingdom life.
So I didn't know. I've never heard. And I wonder why you almost get angry when you talk about it a little bit, because...
Oh, I'm very angry.
Yeah.
Very angry by it.
And I kind of push back because I get angry at you.
Like, Zach, if he even looks at me funny, I'm going to punch him in the mouth.
But like, I get angry at you because that's not the people I know who serve Jesus.
I'll take care of his sidekick for you. Mm-hmm.
These are the people that are going into the crisis pregnancy center where I work and sharing the gospel every week.
Yeah.
Every week. I shared the gospel with a person that had Satan rings on her fingers last week.
Well, and I think that maybe that's what's the issue over the years that we've been in here. I've got a bone to pick now, because the reality is, it's like going to you played sports, right, Zach, when you were coming up? So, you know, there's different kinds of parents.
He was a quarterback behind the towel
guard. Right, but there were different kind of parents with kids in sports. You had the one parent that was like adamant that child was going to be really, really good. And then the other parent that barely paid attention was just happy to see him out there having a good time, you know? And then you had some kids that really, really wanted to excel, but they didn't have any parents that cared. And you had other kids that didn't give a crap, and their parents would force them. Do you see what I mean? Well, churches are like that too. And their leaders are like the parent. See what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And so
the charismatic
churches. In the end, we're all human.
No, of course. Absolutely. So,
and that's...
except for Andy, he's subhuman.
Yeah, charismatic churches. At least through the 80s and 90s, my time in the churches, it was very, very heavy. Mm-hmm. I would say now the charismatic part is probably died down more than it has been in quite some time.
Well, this pocket of North Carolina, though, because when I first came here in 1993 and saw Billy Graham, I'd seen him on TV before, and I was blown. First of all, he was the most magnetic person I'd ever met or listened to. He was amazing, but he blew you away with some of this stuff. I mean, he was really on fire and in your wheelhouse, what you're talking about there. So it was a shock for me coming from the other coast to see that. And so I think this is a pocket of North Carolina and the South, and there are many pockets like it where that is happening.
Are you tired of compromising when it comes to protecting your valuable firearms? Then let us tell you about Carolina Cases, your ultimate destination for hard plastic, impact-proof pistol cases. Carolina Cases are TSA approved and are crafted with high-quality foam, ensuring maximum protection for your firearms during transport or storage. At Carolina Cases, they understand the importance of safeguarding your investments. Carolina Cases provide unparalleled durability, keeping your pistol safe from impact and damage. So hop on over to www.carolinacases.net to explore their wide range of pistol cases designed to meet your specific needs. Don't settle for less. With Carolina Cases, you can ensure your firearms are safely stored, preserve your peace of mind, and protect what matters most. Enter code BUROWS at checkout to receive free shipping.
Well, so let's talk about this next part, Zach. So when you're the pastor, is the church in the Southern Baptist Convention at that time?
It is.
Are you now?
No.
Okay, so let's talk about that.
Uh-oh.
Well, no, this is exactly what we're talking about. There's a reason why you're not in it.
Yeah, us leaving it had absolutely nothing to do with any of my beliefs mm-hmm. on anything.
Okay.
Contrary to what some people might think.
That's interesting.
Well, that ruined it because I thought that's what it was about. Oh, dang it.
It's not.
Yeah.
You're a preterist. Get out.
Well, that's the way it got spun. But
Josh Sexton talked about the spin. Remember the spin?
When they had I think it was maybe 21. 21 was the meeting in Nashville, I think, the Southern Baptist Convention, and we went. And just from that, what we view as we're super biblically conservative. And, some people laugh at that, considering my beliefs.
Yeah.
Anyway, contrary to belief, we're super biblically conservative, and what we viewed was a drift. So, like, even a year and a half, 2 years before I ever even believed fulfilled eschatology, we're already having meetings about leaving with a plan to leave. Mm. And literally everybody is on board with it. So it all comes to a head, and we wind up having the night we vote to leave the Southern Baptist Convention is, let me just say it this way. The way we had to leave was you had to have a month's notice to bring the proposition to leave to the floor. Well, that month was probably the hardest month of my life, because what happened in that month was the people that didn't want to leave, who previously all voted to leave, by the way, unanimously voted to leave, their phones start blowing up. And what happens is when the phones start blowing up, it's the convention calling. So the convention never called me, by the way, but just people in my church trying to get them to leave and to vote against it and the whole kind of deal.
Didn't call the pastor of the church.
No, didn't call me. Well, what's funny is one guy from the convention who's a former pastor of the church sat in my office and looking at a funeral and looking back at it, I know exactly why he was there now. Didn't bring it up, sat right across from me. And I thought, good grief, once it was all over. But we wound up voting 90% to leave it still. So it was good.
What are the advantages to being a part of the Southern Baptist Convention? Like, why would you do that?
Justin shaking his head, none. That essentially,
money.
We came up with none. They like it because they like the cooperation. So what happens is you wind up sending a percentage of your money to the convention, which they wind up paying salaries that you can't even see, but that's neither here nor there. So from a cooperative deal, and I'm not saying there's not cooperative things that aren't good in the convention.
Yeah.
Like, we sent $5,000 to the children's home in Arkansas, and it's part of the convention. Uh-huh. But we no longer send money directly to the convention to support anybody's salaries that way. We didn't like what they were doing with missions. You can know where your money's going, air quotes, I reckon. But there were just some things that we really didn't like. Mm-hmm. I won't get too far into that, but the plan to leave was far beyond that. And I told them when we stood up that night at the meeting, and I said, look, when people hear that we're leaving the convention, the first thing they're going to do is blast me over preterism. And that is exactly what happened to a T. And if you ask any of some of those people that left, which we didn't lose a whole lot. prophecy. Can't assume preterism with street news. If you ask,
you prophesied your own doom.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, no. Yeah,
self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah. It happened exactly like that, which was terrible because these are the same people that had already voted to leave it, but I'll leave that alone.
Well, that's an untruth, which is a lie, which is,
wrong
in the Bible about not doing that.
Yeah, that's what was so bad. So we voted 100% at the meeting to bring it aside. 100%.
Yeah.
Anybody that voted against it in the 10%, then the month from now, had already voted to leave it.
Yes.
So it was. Wow. But, you know, to be fair, and I want to say this, like, I'm not mad at those people. I love those people. They're in a different church now, and God bless them. I pray that I'm going to see them in heaven, even though they may not think I'm going to see them in heaven.
Right.
But who I am mad at are the people who are the leaders in the convention that were calling those people and putting them in their same in those situations. Mm-hmm. People that have been going to a church for 30 years that can't go to that church now anymore because somebody cared more about how much money they were going to have in their pocket if they lost 5% from a church. Like that. And why would you put somebody in? And I'll go a step further to call the women and not to call their husbands.
Right.
And put them in the situation.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. If that doesn't remind you of Genesis 3, I don't know anything that will.
Well, I can tell you this much.
Oh, my word.
So, Andy, as far as the Southern Baptist Convention is concerned, like, let's say that you want to start a church in the area.
It sounds like a union. And but go on.
It is. Oh, yeah. That's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah,
and it can be good and it can be bad. Okay. And so, it has some good positive.
A lot of tools.
It can be a positive thing. It can be. If you hold and sustain to the same beliefs
that
they do.
Just like any organization mostly can be positive
if
the people running it are doing it that way.
That's right. So if you get some skewed things at the top, it can screw up a lot of things for others.
You can, what do they say? Like a snake rots from its head. That's not it, but you get what I,
Yeah, I mean, something with explicit language. But you, right? And then at the top, they just messed it up. And so the whole idea here is, because it's not all the people in the Southern Baptist Convention. It's not the people, not the churches that are in it either. It's just these specific.
What do we say about everything?
It's the ways.
It's the power.
Yes.
They have the power. Mm-hmm. They want to keep it.
Yes.
Thus, they will throw anyone under the bus.
Uh-huh.
That's why they killed Jesus.
I mean, it's the same. Yes, the same thing. It's always about the power, who holds it, and the structure to keep that power in place.
Jeff Durbin has done a pretty amazing exposing some of the Southern Baptist Convention's behaviors and how they handle things. I mean, we may disagree on some of Jeff Durbin's eschatology, but some of the work he's done in abortion for the states and the fact
that Arizona, that dude stays on the street.
Arizona, like he's always Tennessee, on the street. Louisiana, there was a big deal in Louisiana where the Southern Baptist Convention and pro-life actually worked against him at the state house in Louisiana to overturn the bill that they got passed to go in front of legislators about banning abortion in Louisiana. They brought one to South Carolina. I don't know where that ended up yet at. You may know.
6 weeks.
So
Heartbeat. It's called the Heartbeat Bill.
But the Southern Baptist Convention and the pro-life movement has worked very hard against Jeff Durbin and his efforts. And he's uncovered that. He even went to the, I think in 2022, went to the Southern Baptist Convention and exposed some of their discussions at the Southern Baptist Convention, and because they asked questions.
I met him there.
In front of them. And so he's done a pretty good job. I don't know. It seems like most of it's been suppressed pretty well. But if you're paying attention to some things, you will see it. Or if you
not on Christian Twitter,
won't. But
what's that called?
X.
And is that Christian Twitter?
No, it's Elon Musk named it X.
Yeah.
But on Christian Twitter,
Christian Twitter would be like a subdivision of
like a Reddit subreddit.
Your algorithm.
If you
like sports, you'll get sports stuff. If you like politics, you'll get politics stuff. Gotcha. If you like left-leaning, right-leaning. Mm-hmm. Well, if you follow a couple of people on Twitter who are Christians, you start to see some of the mess that's coming out of some of these. So it's not just the Southern Baptist Convention. It's other major organizations.
Well, I mean, even the Presbyterian Church is going through a huge separation right now and break off with different churches.
Methodist.
They're breaking up.
Zach, where do you go from here?
Back to Marktree?
No, yeah. I don't mean like
he's going to the hotel and probably going to take a nice shower.
Drink his bottle.
No, after the vote.
Yeah.
After the vote, I believe.
Yes.
I mean, it was an interesting time. I got hammered. I mean, I'm still getting hammered, to be honest. But, you know, our church got hammered a little bit. But what's unique, and I was literally talking to my office somebody 2 days ago about this. It's like, everything that happened, and we wind up on the other end with more people than we've ever had coming to our church, more people in Sunday school, and more money in the bank than we've ever had.
Hmm.
Like, how does that happen?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. And let me say this too. I owe a lot to the Southern Baptist Convention. Like I grew up in the same association. So like I've been involved in three different churches in the same association, in the same county, in the Southern Baptist Convention. The one I grew up in, one I was a youth pastor in, and where I'm at now. So I owe a lot to those guys. And they're not all bad by no means. And I don't think any differently of any of them that are staying in it. Like I've got, you know, plenty of friends that are still in it. It was just something where I was convicted that we should go. And there were plenty of, and to be honest, I wasn't the one that pushed the envelope in our church. There were other people in the pews that were pushing me saying, hey, when are we going to do something about this?
Yeah.
Plenty of people. But when we did it, it was just kind of a unique deal. And it was hard for me. Like it was hard for me because all these other pastors in the association, like, I mean, I've been close with all of them, but I was the youngest, a lot in some degree, you know, and they, you know, 2 years in, they voted me the moderator of all the convention stuff. So I left the convention as the moderator of our association. And just to be honest, if I wanted to stay that path, I could have played the political game inside of the convention and moved up the ladder and wound up at a pretty big church.
Of course.
So, I mean, that's, you know, that's kind of the game, but I'm not really interested in the game.
Yeah.
You were behind the water boy and the towel girls.
So right.
Yeah, that's true. Didn't like the game at all.
You said you've always been in church. What does your dad think? Like, does he can I ask?
Because
it sounds like, you know, you're real close to your dad and your grandpa, kind of like I am. Yeah. I still work with him.
It took him longer.
Okay.
It took him and my mom longer, and even my sister at Christmas. It was hilarious because she thought I was crazy. And there was this woman that she worked with telling her I was crazy. That was another story. But anyway, my sister, like this Christmas, we sat down, we were talking about it. She's like, yeah, that makes more sense than anything I've ever seen. It took dad a little bit longer and mom probably not as long, but yeah, they're definitely, I don't think they could sit down and explain everything to you, but they definitely see where I'm coming from on that. So there's no hostility there.
Good. Do you have a lot of people that come to your church new and that came from other churches and then come to you and say, what's, we don't understand?
At this point, most people know when they come. So not all of them, but they're like, we had a couple join probably 6-7 months ago. And I mean, they loved it. There've been people like I'm really straightforward too. Like, and I tell people in our new members class, I'm like, look, I believe this probably differently than anybody you've ever heard it. And I've had people not join because of it, you know? So I'm one couple in my mind explicitly. Sorry. But no, it's not really a major deal. And I don't make it a major deal. And if any pastors are listening, I'd say this, you don't have to make it a major deal. Like I'm not teaching on that every week. People listen to me on YouTube and a lot of the YouTube videos that I do will be about some of this stuff of me sitting at my desk. But go listen to me teach on Wednesday night in Exodus and go listen to me teach through all the prophets and then go listen to me teach from the book of Matthew as I've been doing for 2 years on Sunday morning. And you don't have to have an agenda on this thing. Like,
So when you get to 24, you're going to stop like you did the other book?
No, I'm
Daniel ready. 12.
I'm ready to get to 13.
So. Yeah. That's good. So we're going to go. This is the end of our part one. This is a testimony, but we're also going to be talking about what Zach's going to be doing with the Burrows of Berea this year, which is going to be killer. I'm super excited about it. But before we leave, Billy, would you ask the question? Because I would really like to hear his answer.
Oh, okay. So Zach, when Zach Davis's body shuts down and they put you in the box or the ashes or wherever, what do you think happens? Soul sleep, I go to heaven, I see Jesus. Just what happens to Zach?
I think I go to heaven.
Right then. Okay.
Do you want an explanation on that?
Yeah, you got to.
All right. I don't think anybody, depending on what you do with the first century saints from AD 30 to AD 70, I don't think anybody pre-Christ goes to heaven. So if you read Hebrews 11, everybody's in the ground. They're all awaiting. They're still awaiting the New Jerusalem to enter their rest, that inheritance. I think what happens is once the law is fulfilled, the resurrection happens. The dead saints in Hades are covenantally restored back to God. So I think they come out of Hades and they go into heaven to the presence of the Lord. Could those saints in Hades have been moved at some point between AD 30 and AD 70? Don Preston and James Jordan think so because of Revelation 6 when they were under the altar.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Wherever you place that. So if you want to move them there, that's fine, but I don't think you can put anybody in heaven yet. Per Hebrews 11, they're all still waiting to enter that rest in Hebrews 11. At AD 70, once the law is fulfilled, the resurrection happens. The dead saints are raised and enter the presence of the Lord. The living saints are covenantally restored, changed. I think they're called up as episynagoge. It's the spiritual gathering in the first century once the law is fulfilled, meaning they're brought back into the garden or into the presence of God, Revelation 22, like Adam was. And what's better now is that no man in the new covenant versus the old covenant is that no man can be kicked out of the presence of God because he's in the new covenant on the basis of belief in Jesus Christ. Thus, no more death in Revelation chapter 21. When it says no more death, that means even the living saints can't be covenantally cursed out of the presence of God. That makes the curse in Genesis 3 not physical death, but spiritual death. Isaiah 59:2, your sins have made a separation between you and your God. So there's no more covenantal death for those 80, 70 post in the New Jerusalem. Okay, you with me? Living saints or dead. The dead saints are good. Revelation 14:13 tells us, blessed are the dead who die in the Lord from now on, for they will enter their rest. So when we physically die from the moment the law was fulfilled on, when the New Jerusalem or the kingdom comes, which you and I have fully inherited now, John chapter 4, Jesus told the woman it was coming. When we die, we don't go to Hades. We don't go under the altar. We go to heaven, to the presence of the Lord. Blessed are the dead who die in the Lord from now on. They will enter their rest.
Were they gathering at Jacob's ladder underneath the altar?
I don't know. I think Christ was Jacob's ladder.
He was.
Well, that is true. But
he ascended and descended upon the Son of Man.
But the ladder back then for the old covenant was through the Holy of Holies. Was that the altar?
Good point. I hadn't thought about it.
They could be gathering at the ladder to go.
Yeah, I don't think they were there yet.
I mean, they've got, I mean, it.
Are they looking to Christ?
No, I mean, it's all a natural reality that, and I'm saying that, and the only reason we have some connection with that is through Josephus, that there was a altar moment for the Old Covenant saints. And the imagery back then for the Old Covenant was the ladder, which was the gateway from earth to heaven, to God. And they were gathering at that point, getting ready to make their move. How that happened in that realm, we don't know, because nobody has come back to tell us what it was like.
You're saying you think it happened then or at a different point?
Well, probably in 70 AD.
Okay.
I don't have a problem with that. Well, I mean, Josephus, the only reason we have, like I said, that moment is Josephus writes about it and talks about voices in the temple, around the altar, underneath the altar, changes in the temple, the things that were happening at those moments that never happened before. Like the gates being just opening themselves, and they were so big that it took a team of men to move them, and they would just be open. They'd wake up one morning, they'd be wide open, or open however, and they never would do that before. So there were things that were changing. And I mean, I was curious if you thought maybe it could have been they were gathering at Jacob's ladder until the moment in time when.
That's a good thought. I probably hadn't.
I mean, Billy's sitting in the corner, like chewing off his toenails. Because he was just like, I thought you were just going to heaven.
I like that answer. I was good with that.
I have a question.
Yeah. Ah.
So bring it. For those who do not die in Christ, they die without him, what happens to them?
I'm studying.
That's the best answer I get.
Oh.
You don't have an answer.
I'm studying.
Okay.
To be continued.
He's still dealing with either eternal conscious torment or annihilation, or everything just ends. Yeah.
Are you leaning?
I'm studying.
No answer
for
you.
He should run for office. I'm studying.
Heck yeah. Well, this has been fun. So, guys, this is the end of part one. Go listen to part two. Will be coming out next week. That's where we talk about how Zach Navis has taken over. It's time to grow up. Our study on the Epistle of Hebrews. He's doing a study on that now. So what you guys are going to be hearing going forward is Zach Davis teaching, but you're going to hear us doing an intro and an outro on this. So we're going to be discussing what he's teaching instead of us just reading my notes, which was incredibly boring. Wouldn't you agree?
No, grow it was up. Not boring.
No, Rick, I thought it was a very good way to do that.
Because I can't read. I mean, you know.
Yes. So, Zach, I really appreciate you coming all the way up here to be with us, man. That was really cool.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. Billy!
Bye-bye.
Appreciate you, brother. I saw you, like, using your toes, like scrapping on the floor.
His feet broke the stool.
What's wrong with your toenail?
I dropped a piece of oak lumber on it, and I actually had to drill a hole. It's not a fungus.
He had to drill a hole through the nail.
His nails are still tight. Oh,
those are the best.
Yeah, so.
Jerry, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
As always, Sarita.
You betcha.
Thank you. Andy.
Hey.
I'm glad that you cannot leave. Ralph.
Represent.
Rick.
Yeah, baby.
Big Daddy Carter. And everybody, swing that over for Justin. Justin, thanks for coming all the way up here, pal.
Hey, no problem. Appreciate having us.
Yeah, man. Absolutely. Well, we'll talk to you guys again next time on the Burrows of Berea. Peace out.
Bye, y'all.
Later.
It's like a bunch of corpses.
Bubble guppies. Hey, guys. This is Rick from the Burrows of Berea. Do you know how much blood, sweat, and tears it takes to make a podcast? None. But that doesn't mean that it doesn't cost a lot. And so if you guys don't mind, if anybody would like to give to help us with these episodes, it would be great. We'll put out even more content. And if you go to our Patreon page, just search for the Burrows of Berea, you'll get extra notes, extra episodes, and it's pretty much free. A dollar gets you a lot. Thanks, guys.
Andy, you bleep out all my cussing or no?
Yeah. Unless it's really funny.
Don't let the congregation hear it. It's all I need.
So if we keep it clean, we don't have to be explicit. I found out, Andy, that if we're explicit, that we get, according to Sarita, people can't find us.
If they have that explicit, you know, turned off.
Uh-huh.
So, you know what I said?
Lots of good
Oh, well, I guess they're not going to find us.
Yeah. That's what Rick said.
They seem to have largely been doing okay with it this far.
Yeah.
They found it so far.
We've been doing fine.